Ben and Zach here from Hollywood Casino. We're here to talk about Barbarian. And what have we learned from Barbarian, Ben?
Don't be evil.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. I learned how terrible Detroit is.
Yeah, that too. If that's not already a given, like, I feel like people should already know that.
True. I think what this movie taught me is if you can survive Detroit, then you can easily survive a giant naked lady barbarian.
Right. Yeah. Essentially. And Zach is speaking as somebody who survived Detroit.
True. This movie did not scare me in the slightest. What scared me was the context of the movie. where the buildings were.
Yes.
The location, the atmosphere, the oxygen, the nitrogen, the humans, the disgusting, disgusting Detroitians.
What kind of scared me was when they showed the idealistic suburban sequence, and then the one neighbor was like, well, this neighborhood's going to hell, so I'm going to get out of here.
And his grass was beautiful.
But there was no sign of anything being bad at all. Like, when was there ever a sign?
Reagan was being elected, right?
Yeah.
That's
yeah, I guess you're right. They got to move out to the far suburbs, like Rochester Hills. I think that's a nice area of...
Or what is now New Albany, wherever that is in Ohio. That would be a good place to settle down.
Yeah, we're moving down to New Albany.
New Albany. Yeah. We're going to Louisville. How do you say that?
Louisville.
Yeah, that's wrong. Yeah. I think that's wrong.
I think the closer you live to it, the more it's like Louisville.
The more you slur it.
It's like not even a real word.
For us, it'd be like, where are you from? Columbus.
Yeah, but a good example of this is there's a Louisville, Ohio. It's spelled the same way.
Mm.
So it's like that's in like Northeast Ohio, and you the further south you go, it just
I wonder if
you can't talk anymore.
This is a theory, Ben, and you can confirm it with me. Do you think the demographic? Do you think the percentage of white people is more in Louisville than Louisville?
Yeah, I would say that's probably an accurate statement.
That's just a guess. I'm not inferring anything.
That's a guess. No, because I actually think that the
I'm not inferring it from the pronunciation. Don't worry.
Yeah, no, it's a higher percentage white. He's right. It's more because it's a smaller town.
Sure. No, I'm just wondering. But yeah, no, this is first impressions of this movie. I think Ben on your Letterboxd, you wrote like, well, that was a weird, that was like a wild ride, or would you say something?
I said that was an experience.
It was an experience, and I'm not sure what to think of it. All I know is there is this image of this giant gross lady in my head that's going to be stuck there. So that it gave me that. I'm not sure what else it gave me.
It presented you with some moral contrasts, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, well, one thing that I kind of took away from this movie, and this is coming off the heels of, we just released our Don't Worry Darling episode, and it's like, every movie nowadays, it's like it's not good enough for it to just be like a scary movie. It also has to have some sort of like moral point, which I guess theoretically should be better, right? Like, what do you think about messaging in art? Should there be a message in art that's like obvious?
Let's take this even further back to Don't Look Up. All these don't movies. Don't Look Up. Don't Worry, Darling. Don't watch it. Okay, that's what I say. It's just kind of like they. Especially when it's so poignant, it's just like it's in your face.
Yeah.
This isn't as much, so I enjoyed this a lot.
Yeah, this was not as in your face. You have to think more about it. And I don't even think that all, like, I don't know that I necessarily have disagreements with the points that they were making. It's just more like it can seem a little cliche or silly sometimes how they present the points.
No.
If you really think about it.
I definitely agree. I think what got me about this movie in a good sense was some of the action sequences, some of the where is this going? I wasn't sure where the movie was going the entire time. They didn't really tell you when they go to flashbacks or backstories, but they would do it. I think what got me in the wrong way is just kind of the cliche-ness.
Yeah. There was a lot of things you could call. Even, I mean, Zach called one of the major things that happened in the movie that was like supposed to be a reveal, and Zach called it right away. I think I didn't call that one, but there were some other things in the movie that I had been like, oh, this is gonna happen. Like for example, well, maybe we should just go through the plot.
Yeah,
and
I
could point out the things that we got.
Yeah, so mistake number one, she went to Detroit.
Yeah, we have to admit we missed the first 10 minutes, but you know what? It actually doesn't matter because I don't think you really needed it.
No. Yeah, and you don't because we got the whole story. So what they did was they paid Bill Skarsgård a buttload of money to come and die in the first 30 minutes.
Right, yeah. They did. They did do that.
So, yeah, basically these two, there's this Airbnb. It's double booked. There's these two people staying. This guy's a little odd, but he's, you know, he turns out to be all right. But she's staying there. She's a little nervous. They get along. They say, like, that you think that they might sleep together or do something, you know, but they don't. You know, they refrain, you know, abstinence, whatever. And then they, what they do next is she goes to bed. He sleeps on the couch. He has nightmares. Not really sure where that sequence actually goes in this movie, the nightmare part.
No, I think it's just supposed to be off-putting.
It's a red herring.
By the way, this is Tess and Keith. So Tess is the woman and Keith's the man who double booked for the Airbnb.
Yeah, whatever.
Keith!
So Keith, he's having these nightmares. She goes out to be like, she touches him. He freaks out. Then she thinks like something weird is going on because also her door was open when she woke up and she had shut it when she went to bed. So then she locks the door, goes to bed, wakes up, and it's fine. She then all of a sudden she goes into the basement, finds this weird area, right, Ben? I'm not skipping anything. And she finds this weird area. She pulls a rope and this door opens out of the cement wall.
She got locked into the basement while she's doing this.
Correct, yes. Apparently the basement door locks from the outside.
Which is weird. No way to like kick it down. It's a super strong door.
Or she only tried to hit it like three times.
Yeah, she didn't. She really didn't go for the like trying to knock down the door through some creative method.
No, not at all. In fact, there was like a crowbar in the corner, I think. Legit.
Yeah, I think
there was a crowbar in the background. So, yeah, so she finds another secret room within the secret room and another one within that and another one within that, and it just keeps going and going and going. It's like Dante's Inferno.
It's like the eight layers.
And she finds this room with a bloody mattress, supposedly it could be ketchup, and a camera, and then she finds this like deep, deep cave with deep steps, like when you're in Minecraft.
Actually, I believe Keith finds the cave.
You're right, yes. And then she follows him in.
She has to follow him in after he doesn't come out. Because he is kind of an idiot, and he looks like an idiot. And I think they do this to try to make you think that he's going to be the barbarian. But he's like, no, we can't leave. I have to see it. Like, it's so weird. Like, I didn't really get that part.
And he, like, forces her to be down there where the danger is.
Yeah. Like, he goes down, and he doesn't come back up. Because he's like, well, don't leave. Make sure I'm okay. So then she goes down and he's crying for help, which you're like, well, he's gonna bait her into a trap is what you're thinking, kind of.
And this is where Ben and I were like, well, this movie seems kind of dumb. Like, obviously he's going to lure her into something dumb. Then all of a sudden, like, he gets grabbed by this really tall, giant, naked woman, gray-haired.
Yeah, like, very deformed, like, yeah.
Monster almost, huge. But she was like a human, and she like smashes his head into the wall a bunch of times, and the wall is rock. And Ben and I just look at each other like, well, okay.
We're like, what are they? My question was, what are they gonna do once they find the barbarian? Like what? Because this was only halfway through the movie, or maybe even
It was a half hour into the movie.
Yeah,
there's nothing. It was barely in there.
And then they take a strong cut, which I kind of like that they did that. I like the blank screen and then cut.
Mm-hmm. And then it goes to a backstory of some rich a-hole who's not really like, he has a rape allegation against him. He was producing a TV show. The pilot got canceled because of his allegation. And he, you know, his life is spiraling. He gets his financial advisor, quits, and his everything just going downhill. So he goes to liquidate one of his properties, which is the Airbnb that they happen to stay at, which is about a 20-minute sequence that leads into the main plot.
If they could have shaved down any time, it would be in this part. Which is not even like
they could have shaved out the entire character, and I wouldn't have cared.
Yeah, maybe they didn't really have to give him the backstory. But anyway, he is like, if Bill, not Bill, Keith was an idiot. This guy's like an idiot on steroids.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he's the Barry Bonds of idiots.
Barry Bonds
of because Barry Bonds juiced. That's the reference.
Gotcha.
And so he ends up in the basement and he finds the door, and then he finds the extra room, which he's super excited about because of extra square footage. Which for some reason I thought that he might be like, I can't take credit for it fully because Zach didn't hear me say this, but I was thinking in my head.
I trust you
that. Like something about square footage, maybe it was a more abstract thought, and then all of a sudden it was like he was actually excited about that, and so he went down to measure the room. He didn't care about the bloody bed. Yeah, I can't say that word right, I guess. Measure.
it's measured. Like last time you said werewolf. No, werewolf. Werewolf.
Okay. My feelings
sorry.
Aren't hurt.
I'm sorry.
And then... so he's not concerned about the camera or the bloody mattress or anything. And that... Which, yeah... The reaction to this whole situation that people have just feels weird, but... And then he finds the extra room. He's even more excited. He doesn't care that it's a weird-looking cave and that he knows that there might be people who are squatting at his house. Like, he has one kitchen knife that's not even that big. Like, this guy is not... I get there's a lot going on. He might not have the clearest head, but he is just... I don't know, man. He's just not thinking straight. And then he goes in this room, which there... This is where, the movie gets really weird. In that, he finds a room where there's, a video, it's like an infant nursing instruction video. Mm-hmm. And then, which is, not at all what you would expect to find in a random basement. I would bet 100 out of 100 times you ask somebody what's going to be in a random basement, they're not going to come up with that. Then he stumbles upon the barbarian, and... of course, the barbarian chases him into a dungeon, puts it over his head, and then he meets Tess, who's been down there for 2 weeks. And the barbarian wants to bottle feed him.
The bottle is so gross. She hands the bottle down. That was a really good scene, actually. Because you're in this trance, what is happening? And you're watching this thing, and it looks disgusting. And then you see her drink out of the bottle because she has to for survival. And you're like, man, this is so disgusting. How far, would you rather die, Ben?
No, I don't know. I mean, I feel like your will to survive would come through and you'd end up drinking out of the bottle. I bet she didn't drink out of it the first time either. And she got something happened to her. And she, after that happened, she was like, I'm just drinking out of the bottle. Do you think that? Or
maybe,
she just was able to figure out that, she had an instinct that that the bottle was an important part of surviving.
I mean, she probably had to learn the hard way, yeah. I would assume.
This wasn't a coherent person.
No.
You're not going to really... The barbarian woman person, she wasn't able to communicate verbally very well, so...
And so the whole... I think that's where you kind of learn, based on those nursing instruction videos that she... and by where I don't mean your profession nursing, I mean
literally nursing a baby.
And those nursing videos, she kind of wants to take care of a child. The barbarian's trying to be a maternal figure to these captives.
Yeah. There's something not right where we don't know why yet and we'll learn later, but where she has this I have to be maternal, but she just doesn't know the right way to go about doing that. So she just I don't even know that she captures people. Because these were the only people that were there. So she didn't, go... Well, maybe she did. I don't know. Because we find out from the homeless person, who is also in the movie, who we're supposed to think is a bad guy at first, and then we realize that was the person trying to save her the whole time.
Who's just hanging out in that area.
Yeah. Because he's homeless, presumably.
Presumably, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But, yeah, I think... Then it just kind of goes into this action where they're trying to avoid it. You know, he gets stuck in there. She gets stuck in there. She escapes, actually, because he
gets dragged out because he doesn't drink the bottle. And so she escapes.
Yep. And she goes after the barbarian, goes after her. She gets out. Then she goes back in to save the other guy, which was mistake number two after going to Detroit.
Right. And then she tries to get the police to help and they're just not having it. There's too much going on in Detroit.
Do you have your ID?
Yeah, I don't believe you're a real person if you don't have an ID. Is that, I don't know. Maybe in Detroit, they did reference the crackhead issue. If somebody starts coming up and spewing random stuff, you're probably going to assume they're a crackhead. But I would also think there's an aspect of when somebody's a crackhead, you can usually tell because they've taken drugs for so long. There's some effects that it has it's noticeable that I didn't think she had some qualities that she didn't have.
No.
So that's where it was odd that they were she's a crackhead. I don't know.
Maybe it was a social commentary. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, and she goes back for him. He actually shoots her.
accidentally.
Yeah, and Ben called that like 2 minutes before.
Because I could see it. It's trouble. He had just met the guy who had, we find out, was either, I don't know, grandfather, great-grandfather? I don't know.
Some relative. It could be uncle, father, and grandfather, yes, at the same time.
Yeah, it's a bad situation that's going on with the backstory of this guy who is a serial rapist and murderer, probably?
I mean, he had to have been a murderer because all those tapes.
He was
both,
because he was the original barbarian, essentially. Mm-hmm. And he lived in the neighborhood that was going to hell in Detroit that we referenced earlier. Maybe because of him, actually. probably because of him. Because he would stalk these women and take them and you know, do terrible things. And then he eventually had children through that action, through raping them, which, you know, is like, you know, is realized through the tapes. He looks at one tape that this guy had and he realizes how horrible of a person. And we get a little bit of a contrast because this guy's accused of rape. And like the way he explains it is more like,
it was like a gray area from
his perspective. Whereas this was to him a more obviously like this guy's in the wrong. But then you realize that also it's kind of ironic that this guy is talking, that the guy accused of rape is talking to a guy who's like confirmed that like he's such an evil person when he's being accused of the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that's like a self-imploding moment or do you think that's a proving his innocence moment?
I think it's like, to him, it might be proving his innocence, but it's also imploding in some senses where he realizes like how bad of a person he is potentially, or like also like, you know, how bad of a person other people become through some of these things that he's already been involved in, like the way he thinks.
Maybe like, I don't want to be like him. I should reform my ways.
Yeah, maybe. But I think there's more to be said on that part of the story as we go on into the movie. Because
I think you're right.
His actions, I don't know that they, by the end of the movie, really reflect that he actually changed.
And I also don't think that the writers played that deep into his character based on his epiphany at the end.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think it's kind of maybe his character is a bit confusing and we don't get the whole picture of what's going on. And maybe that's the point. It's like people make assumptions about all of these things, but sometimes we really don't know what actually is happening. So everyone makes judgments based on like the celebrity news they get, but nobody really knows the truth behind what's going on, despite what people
legit
say.
Per example, I was in Chicago and I was at an airport and I saw this magazine that said Harry Styles and Olivia Wilde broke up, but they haven't.
Yeah.
But it said that on the cover and it didn't put a question mark and put an exclamation mark.
Yeah. Now that was probably National Enquirer, which they are like known for being like slandering people basically, but
I don't know.
But at the same time, yeah, like those headlines and stuff, like, usually there's a longer part to the story, but people are quick to make assumptions based on what they read.
No,
assumptions. So I think this was like referencing maybe the complexity of that to some degree. Mm-hmm. Although it was an odd backstory to like build so much up for this character, because they really emphasized having this backstory.
I agree, and I think they only emphasized it to relate him to the barbarian in that one scene. Other than that, the backstory didn't have any purpose.
Right. Yes.
Is that fair to say?
I mean, mostly. And maybe it makes sense with some of the decisions this character makes at the end of the movie that he does have this backstory. Okay. But
yeah, fair enough. But I also think that like,
you could have had that without having this
for sure
long of a backstory.
For sure. Yeah. So then by this time, they're both out. The monster actually leaves the house, which the homeless guy that was helping them said that has never happened. So the barbarian's out. She chases them to like the top of, what is it, top of a tower?
It's like it's like a water tower.
And she is wounded. He is fine. And he has no other option but to push her off because...
It was unexpected. But what ends up happening, he knows that she's going to jump after her. The monster's going to jump after Tess. So he knows that. I don't think he knows that Tess is going to live. Like, I actually don't think he knows that at all.
I also don't think he cares.
No, that's... exactly. He doesn't care because when he goes down, he's like, oh my gosh, you're still alive. Like, this was the only choice. He's already, like, rationalizing to her. Like, he has to defend himself. And then it's like the barbarian has a maternal instinct that this guy did something wrong and just absolutely like destroys him by like rips his head apart essentially.
Yeah. I also skipped that the barbarian ate the homeless guy.
Yeah, which or was like, that not was super ate, like, sad. I almost cried during that part.
No, what did he do? He put
like ripped his arms off.
Yeah, his arm. Yeah, that's not as bad as pushing his eyes in.
No, yeah, that's what he did to the.
No, the gore. The gore was pretty good.
Yeah, the gore was good. It was.
I liked it
when it was there.
I liked it a lot.
And the other guy, the rapist guy, had shot himself already. If I didn't mention that already, so that was kind of weird. Like you get this whole backstory of him, and then he just shoots himself. Like there's no like, I don't know. There's no justice. Like it feels like he gets away kind of with it because he gets to go out on his own terms. But it does look like he maybe suffered some consequences because he's kind of under the rule of this barbarian creature, but it doesn't seem like he had it that bad. I don't know. It's like he got... Yeah, it's essentially like he got to get away with it.
I mean, obviously, he's surviving because of the maternal features of the barbarian.
Right.
So
even though, like, if she really understood, he would be, like, a horrible person, but she doesn't understand what he's done.
Because the twist is she's this complete big giant... She's giant because she's an incest baby. That's, like...
Yeah.
That's why.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the plot. I mean, it's not... I think there's just a lot of sequences that happen, but it's not too terribly difficult to understand.
She also shoots the barbarian at the end. We forgot to mention
that. Yeah, I mean, that's... Obviously, everybody dies, whatever. And then she, like, limps away during the credits.
Yeah.
And that's it. So, maybe there's a post-credits scene. We don't care. No.
The barbarian, too. It's bigger.
So, maybe going into the themes that we just talked about. So, like, who is the barbarian in this film?
I think there's, like... So I think that the three guys are all barbarians in some senses as presented by the film. The original guy who started the whole thing essentially by being a serial rapist, he is the original barbarian. So like none of any of this would have happened without him.
True.
Being the barbarian originally. The incest baby's a barbarian, but you're like to some sense like she doesn't feel human, even though she is. And I really don't know if this is how it would, like, is it a real thing that if there's this much incest that goes on, that many, like, gene mutations, that somebody would be able to function like them? Obviously, there's an environmental aspect to it, too. Presumably, she was in the caves her whole life.
I doubt, like the environment that we have here on Earth could support, like, lungs that big, hearts that big.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Human, like, you know? I think there's obviously an extension of disbelief. So it's like you almost can't really take that much away from that story because that person wouldn't exist.
Yeah, but so, I think she would be the product of his mistakes, and that's how we have to
and
look
so
at
it's
it.
Like a consequence. It's like you built, like, this guy essentially birthed a monster, I guess.
For sure.
So, but through his like, evils. And so, I guess it's like a physical representation of the evil that he's done and the consequences that it has on other people. Mainly Tess, who, while she is not particularly bright in a lot of moments in this movie, you still feel for her because a lot of the time, the reason why she's in bad situations is not because it... not necessarily because she's dumb, it's because she lets her guard down because she's trying to care about people. And yep. She constantly gets the opposite effect back from those people.
Mm-hmm.
Even Keith, who's not even, presumably not trying to hurt her, really doesn't do a lot of his actions in her best interest, right?
How would you say that?
Well, I'm particularly talking about the scene where he's like not really believing her and
okay.
Like saying that he has to go down. He has to go all the way back, like all the way back onto the kid. He just seemed like so dumb. Like as soon as he sees the room, like
I don't think he forced that. I think he was just really stupid.
Yeah, I think it's more like he was really stupid. But it's, and then her caring nature. Obviously, she couldn't let him, and she wasn't able to save him. But at least she didn't just abandon him and never know. She wouldn't have been able to live that down if she hadn't known what happened to him. And then what really burned her, and this is the tragic one, is when she puts her life on the line really to save AJ, the rich actor guy, or formerly rich actor guy, and then he absolutely does the opposite and basically almost murders her, or tries to murder her essentially to save his own life. So it's like he's the barbarian because at the end of the day, despite his epiphanies, he always puts himself and his own interests above everyone else's.
Yeah, I think a key aspect of this film was, I think clearly AJ is one of the barbarians, if not the barbarian, because he's the present day. You know, he's the one that the story is centered about. He gets the longest backstory. He gets the most screen time, almost. Unfortunately, I didn't think he was the best actor.
No, and yeah, it is unfortunate because I thought that like, like of all the characters to be like make the point about, like I just didn't really like him.
They should have switched.
I mean, you're not
Bill
supposed
Skarsgard.
To like him, but he's just yeah. He wasn't. There wasn't anything. They made him so unappealing that it was just like a chore to spend time with him.
Exactly, you're definitely right. But yeah, I think his epiphany. We keep saying the epiphany. Like I think what was his exact lines were like. Or closely.
I'm a bad guy. I might be a bad guy. I might be a good guy who did bad things. But then he's like, well, I could be a bad. Like he's going back and forth.
It's so simple. There's no depth to that.
No. Because everyone is going to reach a point in their life because everyone is bad. So,
but that I think what a good theme that came out of this maybe shallow character is, you know, the rationalization of bad actions.
Yes.
I think he did that two or three times throughout the movie where he would be like, oh, you know, what I did wasn't so bad. You know, I was just doing this and this happened. You know, he talks with his friend about what the alleged rape. He says, you know, I was with her and, you know, at first she said no. At first she wasn't into it. But, you know, later on she was into it. You know, I didn't do anything wrong.
Right. Yeah, he completely excuses any possibility that any of that might have been wrong.
Exactly. And then later on he's like, oh, no, you know, she was going to push us both off anyway. I had to push you off. I had no other choice. You know, in fact, we're saved. We're good now. You're good. And
yeah.
I also think, like, when he shot her, like, that should have been addressed more. Like, she's fine with it in the next scene.
Well, that one's the easiest one to excuse as a complete accident because you could understand why he was so... Because he would have no idea.
But someone in that much pain would not...
Also, though, he... It's not like he knew that she escaped. So it was maybe... you could maybe accuse him of being a little bit too quick. But... In that situation, it's easier to understand why somebody would be so like quick with the trigger.
Yeah.
After all that,
it
happened.
It is easier, but like I feel like she would like if I were shot even by accident, friendly fire.
Yeah.
I would still be mad.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
If if you were just shot by someone, you don't excuse it right away.
She didn't. Yeah. Maybe it'd be a little easy. It would be over time. Maybe you could mend that, but in the moment, it might not. It may be like,
like she's
fine. Are you serious?
Like he picks her up and helps her, and that's it.
Especially because she specifically went in to try to help him.
Yeah.
So that would be a little bit frustrating. I could see that.
Yeah, and then, you know, the last rationalization he had was, you know, am I a good guy? Am I doing the right thing? Yeah, maybe. And that's kind of it. So it's just, I think that's definitely a theme, even if it's a minor theme, just of AJ's character of this guy who really is a barbarian who convinced himself that he's fighting the barbarian, but when in fact he is. And then we also have this reverse of who we thought was the barbarian, you know, the tall lady that's literally looks like a monster, actually cares and loves for Tess.
Tess, yeah.
And, you know, she's still a monster. She still killed people, whatever. But, you know, she did care for Tess, and she tried to sacrifice her life for it. She put herself...
She still had to get shot because she wanted to take her back to the...
And because she's a giant incest monster, so, like, she should be shot. I don't care, like, what people say about that, okay?
What are the ethics of
giant incest babies?
Fortunately, we'll never have to know because that's not going to happen.
Well, maybe. We'll see. We'll see what these DNA mutations...
Yeah, we'll see what the... This is like... So, I watched the movie... Reanimator, which we were gonna do, and I thought it was too stupid to do, and I don't know whether it was stupid compared to this movie, because actually, to be honest, there might be a lot of similar themes. But in that movie, it's like med students trying to like bring people back to life, essentially, and so they become these giant like zombie monsters, kind of like where they're super strong, kind of like in this movie, I like the barbarian, and it's the same kind of thing where you're like, well, what? I mean, I guess you just kill these people because they're not like they're not really alive; they're just being like they're. Chemicals are like reanimating their body.
Mm-hmm.
Even though the one med student really wants to think that they're alive, there's still some of these like, yeah, that I just there were some parts of that movie I was like, this is stupid, I don't like this.
What year was that? An older,
like 1985. Yeah. It's more campy and a little bit more dated perhaps.
Yeah,
but really actually some of the themes you could probably it's just less like nowadays it's like everything has to be so fleshed out. I want to say, like, if you watch a lot of the older, like, campy horror movies, there was no, like, oh, we're going to do a backstory on this character and, like, this and have this. It was just, like, straight through the story.
Well, yeah, we're requiring too much of our horror movies. Let's leave them a little bit simpler.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. But then, I mean, maybe they've just done all the good simple ideas, so now we just have to make them more complex.
No, I don't think you run out of ideas, like, in the concept level.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, no, I think another theme that we hit on was kind of just, you know, I think there is some deeper commentary of men and women in this movie.
Yeah.
You know, obviously there's the nursing scenes, there is the maternal part of the monster, there is even straight up lines at the beginning she's saying, like, something about women having to be careful, stuff like that.
Like, if she had been first there, she would not have let Keith stay the night. She would have made him leave. Whereas, since, I think what happened at the start of the movie that we missed was, she came in and realized he was there. There weren't any vacancies in any hotel, so she, on short-term notice, wasn't able to find any other places to stay. So she's kind of like, and it was storming, so she was kind of stuck, and she's already in, like, a terrible area of Detroit. So it was like, her odds of, like, she would be just as unsafe anywhere else as she would be here with this guy. But you can understand, I mean, you could completely understand why she's uneasy with being with this guy, like, the random stranger. Like, you're just, and if you were a guy, you would maybe be, your biggest concern would be trying to make the girl not think that you were a weirdo, which might make you look like a weirdo. I think that was kind of the awkward tension at the start of the movie.
Yeah, he's like forced, like trying to convince her and like stuttering. And
which it kind of like makes it look like you're trying too hard then, and that you are actually up to no good. And so,
and you're Bill Skarsgård.
Right.
You're the guy who plays Pennywise.
You already look a little bit maniacal or odd.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I think, yeah, that was definitely a theme. I'm not exactly sure what the conclusions were, because I think it got a little clustered at the end.
Yeah, at the end, it kind of just turned in. And this, I read a brief review by somebody else, and they were kind of saying, yeah, in the third act, it just got, they just ramped everything up to 11, and it got kind of out of control, and it's like you couldn't really tie anything up other than with death. Death was the way they tied things up.
That's true. You got to have some death in a horror movie, unless you're The Conjuring. Or not The Conjuring. What's the first? Is that The Conjuring? Yes.
The Conjuring, yeah. Where they...
Nobody dies.
Yeah, nobody dies in The Conjuring, right?
Somebody,
well, somebody died, like, in the past, right?
That doesn't count. Everybody dies in the past.
Right. That's a good point.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think that was whatever they landed on, I missed, apparently. but, yeah, I think the big question that the movie Barbarian asks is, who is the barbarian? Obviously, I think the biggest barbarian is definitely the older fellow that was unlocking this girl's window in the flashback and kidnapping her and raping her and you know, having kids and then breeding himself with those kids, having incest babies. He is obviously the barbarian.
Right.
So how are we supposed to draw negative connotations about this AJ guy when we have such a clear answer of who the barbarian is, even though they are clearly trying to say that AJ is a barbarian in general, or he has qualities of a barbarian, or he rationalizes like a barbarian?
Yeah.
Where?
Well, that's the thing. Does AJ rationalizes? Does the guy who's the barbarian, does he actually rationalize?
He does not. He just does.
He just does. He doesn't think that what he's doing is right at all. I mean, or if he doesn't think it's right, he doesn't care. His name's Frank. And he just, yeah, he's like the classic either sociopath or psychopath, one of the other ones, where it's just like, you know the social norms, you know everything, and you actually just don't care, and you just do, like, you have no feeling towards those things, and you just move. Whereas it's like AJ, they're like trying to make this direct comparison, but you can't actually make the comparison. Like, obviously, you can compare actions that people do and say objectively some actions are worse than others. What Frank did was way worse than what AJ did.
Exactly.
But that doesn't justify AJ and his actions.
Exactly.
But it makes it hard when you're like trying to make a hard comparison. Like,
exactly.
Yes, AJ is wrong by all senses of what we get, AJ was in the wrong in this situation, despite him saying that he wasn't. Like, it sounds like he actually was in the wrong, but he wasn't in the wrong in the same way that Frank was.
It's so hard to focus on AJ.
Yeah.
It's hard to be like, this is the guy that needs to be stopped.
Right. Well, maybe the thing is, it's like, this guy's, it's like, we know that this is like an obvious evil, even though it's hidden, but, and then it's like, this is more subtle, but in some senses, actually, it, like, that, what AJ did is far more public. mm-hmm. and in the public eye. So it's like actually more like people know about it more than maybe he might be able to more easily argue his way out of it somehow.
Which makes me think it's uncomparable.
Yeah. It's like maybe it's like very loosely comparable.
AJ's already been caught for what he's done.
Yeah. He's right? already has to have consequences for it.
Right.
I mean, whether or not they like have some sort of like they may not be able to prove it in court, mm-hmm. but in the court of public opinions, in the court of his career, he already lost.
Exactly. And I think this is where the movie fails big time. I think the comparison between the original guy, Barbarian Frank, and the supposed barbarian on trial, AJ, I think where they try to compare and contrast them is really, really cloudy, mixed, gray, unclear. I think obviously one of them is in the open. The other one was never figured out. One of them gets to kill himself, like get out on his own terms, whatever you think of killing yourself. You know, he kills himself.
Like wouldn't be a benefit to him, but like to some aspects, the way that people think about things like killing yourself would be like a, like you don't have to pay your penalty by like through public shame, through the process of the court, anything like that.
I mean, it's either that or a life five life sentences, because it's Detroit. Yeah. They don't have death penalty. But the thing is, like, so he and then AJ gets ripped apart.
Yeah.
So there, it's in just some sense different.
That's a little ironic, but I mean, I guess they both, it's the same end for both of them. They both die.
This is what I was expecting, though. In the beginning, they have this line where Keith and Tess are talking, and he goes, yeah, men just rip out hearts. And he goes, no, women can rip out hearts, too, no, or break hearts Keith or something.
Says women can rip out hearts, too.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I meant to say. And I was imagining that either Keith or AJ would have their heart ripped out.
Oh, that would be by interesting. Her.
By the woman, the mother.
Oh, okay. That would be an interesting, like...
I think that's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, that kind of was.
But another...
They could have done that instead of the... Because it would have been like, women can rip out hearts too, and she could have ripped out his heart. Man, really, that was sitting right there for them.
Mm-hmm. No, nobody point. Likes to make their script concise. Nobody likes to cross-reference their own script.
Right, yeah. It's too obvious if they do that. You don't want anybody to be able to predict anything.
But I also think one of the biggest lack of comparison that could be made, where I mean like it's hard to compare AJ and Frank, is just, yeah, like we said, the quality and the deeply sinful, terrible things that they did are just different acts. One of them is way worse. One of them is bad. One of them should not be condoned in any circumstances, if true. And the other one is like the worst thing that you can think of.
Yeah.
Like I've never thought about raising incest babies and breeding them with each other. Because that's worse than what I've ever thought.
Yeah, and legitimately, like it is definitely like one of the worst things you could possibly do. Like, so
think of something worse. No, I mean, I'm joking.
I don't want to.
I mean, yeah, it's just like, and Frank's.
I mean,
there.
For one person, it's like that would be the equivalent of, you know, if you don't have the power, like it's the same thing as like mass genocide. Like, I don't know. It's just like on a small scale.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I agree. Like Bloody Mary equivalent, not Holocaust equivalent. Yeah, I agree. I think another big aspect I wanted to ask you, what do you think Frank, like what is he doing there? Like what is his intentions? Why is he in that bed? Was he always in that bed? Does the mother take care of him? Like I'm so
assuming
confused.
He's just so old at this point that he's sick and he can't take care of himself and the mother's taking care of him. He's just, I mean, he has all those videotapes of all those horrible things that he did, and sometimes you wonder that he's laying there and just thinking about like whether he ever thinks about like, here's I am mired in my own like feces and like with the what I have in my life, which is like a collection of every horrible act that I committed. And it's like, there's no sign that he ever feels regret. But if you think about like an end of a life, it's like, that would be like one of the worst ways. You don't get sunlight. You're just in a cave and yeah, you're at the mercy of, something that you created.
So you think he was at the mercy. He wasn't in control.
I mean, he could have had some, I mean, he presumably raised this barbarian incest babies, so maybe we never see them interact, so we have no idea.
Exactly, that's what I was a little confused about.
Yeah, so but presumably she's not killing him, and how does he get water and have anything? Like,
yeah,
so it's probably
just milk.
Yeah,
it's disgusting. I think So I was also thinking about this practically, like on a timeline basis. Like, so she had been, the homeless guy said she was down there for 40 years, right? And she was born in that house, raised in that house, had
never left that house. Was that just an exaggeration? Was she?
Might have been.
Yeah.
But we have to assume then that that old guy looking 40 years younger was in that flashback. And that when he was shopping at the store, he was shopping for the birth of that monster, right?
Yeah, that'd probably be.
I mean, that's just an assumption. What else would it be?
Right.
So I'm just imagining he would have had to start raising and breeding much earlier than that for generations to occur for that.
Yeah, you think.
So that genetic mutation had already been conceived in that mother's stomach prior to the flashback.
Yes.
Think about that. So how long has he been doing this?
I know. It's actually insane. Is this supposed to be a commentary? It's so wild, and it's on such a... How were so many women being kidnapped, and like there was no like mass search for like somebody? Like I know it's like it wasn't obvious that he actually, though, was it? It probably was off. If you even saw the inside of his house, you'd be like, where are there like shovels? And like he has a whole cave system. How did that get it? Did he build that? Did he legitimately like build that whole system for the infrastructure for this?
Do you think he operation. Built the cave, or was it already there?
I mean, I don't. How? Why would the cave already be there? I mean, I guess it could have been like
storage.
How would he have known that, like, that to build his house on this area where that he could access a cave? Like, maybe.
I mean, Detroit's not known for coal mines.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what area? I mean, I get this is probably like was the first one of the first levels of suburbs. So it's like when they pushed out from the city, but still, it's. Maybe it's like one of those horror movie things. If you think too much about it, it's just like it's not worth thinking about it because.
Look, it kind of reminded really me sense. Of. It kind of reminded me of a little bit, and you mentioned this earlier, the Black Phone, just yeah. A little bit, just like.
But they in that movie, you got a sense that they knew that kids were being kidnapped, and this yeah, was like
because they're fighting, like they're actively searching.
Yeah, and this. You just didn't get the sense that like people were concerned about like women getting kidnapped.
It's an Airbnb. What happens there stays there.
Well, yeah. Also, this was I saw a review that was like you can't spell barbarian without Airbnb.
That's
so
true.
You can rearrange the letters and it's barbarian.
That's true.
Isn't that cool? That's probably how they got why they named the movie Barbarian. Actually,
I think the street was also Barbary Street.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not sure if that has anything to do with it, like the Barbary Inn.
Maybe.
Like, because she was born on that street and never yeah. leaves. I don't know. So, I mean, that would just be a really dumb way to integrate that. But, yeah, I mean, what do you think the movie failed at, Ben?
I think it failed at the landing. Like, I didn't... Like, the end was just... I think these movies are hard to end, though. And sometimes...
How would you end it?
That's what I'm saying. I don't know if they have a better way to end it.
Okay.
So...
Fair.
Like, other than them just escape... The police believing them, it's like... all like cliche like you have to have some like there always has to be like the barbarian comes back to life and then you know like you're there's never like whenever you think it's the end it's definitely not the end.
Ben, what did I say I didn't like about this movie but I liked about another movie?
The Basement?
No
like
with jump scares and building up.
Oh, I don't
it says Mulholland Drive.
Oh, Mulholland Drive, yeah.
And I said I've seen so many horror movies, and I hate it. I've started to just detest when movies start playing that eerie music, and the characters tiptoeing in a dark room. They do something stupid, and then wait, nothing happens. The music stops. You think you're in the clear. Then they turn around, and then jump scare. It's the same exact thing every single yeah. time, and I'm never scared because that's what you anticipate. That's what comes. The adrenaline. Your brain prepares for the adrenaline, okay?
Yeah.
Because it knows it's coming, therefore the effect is not the same. I think what happened in Mulholland Drive is you have these awkward scenes where these events occur in such a spooky and creepy way because they happen like real life without order.
Yeah.
When you're tiptoeing, the character isn't experiencing eerie music. The character isn't experiencing, even if they look one way and then look back and then look and then turn around and it's there. That's creepier than like a pause and a build up and this tension rise. You don't need these waves, okay? You just need them to be like I was really hoping that when she was just walking, like, in the background, something would just walk and right up to her and just grab her, like, just randomly. I was hoping that's just what would happen, like, without any build-up pretense or presupposition, anything like that.
Yeah, that's true.
It would just happen. But it just didn't, and that really disappointed me. And I hope more horror movies do stuff like that. But, I mean, Mulholland Drive is not even a horror movie. It's just, like, I wish that horror movies would go in that direction of just, like, stop being a horror movie in the sense that it has to follow these guidelines, it has to have these structures and motifs, and do your own thing.
The only issue is that the only way to solve that is to have every director be David Lynch, which doesn't work.
Well, I don't even think it has to be David Lynch. I just think it should, if there are so many different ways it could do it.
Yeah, there's so many different ways you can be unsettling with that. But, like, based on the setup of this movie, I'm not sure how else they would do it. I mean, I did jump at a few of the moments, but I probably should have known that they were coming. But there were also a few moments that I did. Like, Zach saw me. He saw me tense up a couple times. I kind of agree with you, though. It's like whenever they were walking down at dark, I was like, there's going to be something. I know there's going to be something. They do try to fake you out, but it usually doesn't work.
That's what happens every time. Yeah. Every time.
Well, now it's like you're used to being faked out.
Exactly.
So you know when it's going to, like, not be a jump scare, and then you kind of, because they're trying to lull you into, like, but you know it's going to happen. So,
but now they're catching on. What they're doing is a double fake out for the Gen Zers these days. Okay.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. I read somewhere that it was like something was satirical. I was like, what was satirical about this movie? I don't get, like.
Maybe his life, AJ's?
AJ's life was satirical? Maybe. I don't know. Supposed to be a, like, commentary on, like, the Me Too movement? I don't know. Was it because he was in Hollywood? It's such an interesting, like...
It definitely had something to do with gender.
Yeah.
Gender roles, possibly.
Zach and I were just wondering whether, like, now, anytime we go see a movie in theaters, we're going to have to talk about gender roles, like, every single episode.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't... Like, maybe there's some... things that need to be discussed, but, like, I don't know. It's
we're a movie podcast. I want to review the Deer Hunter type movies.
Yeah. That's the thing. Maybe, what do you think it is about modern movies? Because I've seen this with Vengeance. I've seen this with
it's not even modern. It's the last few years.
It's the last few years. There's something that's not coming. Like, there's that directors are thinking this is going to be a great idea, and they put these movies together and they put them out, and there's something that just doesn't work. Like, and maybe it's like the Deer Hunter feels timeless. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
I agree.
And the Deer Hunter was of its era, right? The Vietnam War had only happened 10 years before. Maybe it's like, well, we're doing things that are like happened a year ago, but
well, that's like doing a movie about COVID.
yeah, like a year after. To be fair, Don't Look Up wasn't really supposed to be about COVID.
And COVID's very different than the Vietnam War too.
Yeah, that's true. But the Deer Hunter feels like such stylistically, it's so different. And same with Raging Bull. Like Raging Bull and the Deer Hunter, you could see similarities stylistically, I think, somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Deer Hunter's a little bit more grandiose, but like it's like you're watching characters live. In some sense, like it feels so raw, like you see people making jokes, and then we got to this like Tarantino thing where it's like the dialogue was so like non-related to anything that was happening in the movie, but it felt like kind of authentic. But if you really think about it, the dialogue's like way too witty for anybody to actually be like saying that.
True.
But it did like change the way people view. I think in the 90s there was like this whole like independent movie movement with Tarantino and Paul Thomas Anderson, but now some of these movies that are coming out, and maybe it's just that like I've seen the most new movies this year, and so maybe I'm starting to get a better picture of what like the average movie being made is like.
Yeah, but in the 2010s you had Transformers and Avengers.
Right.
Those, and you had like those big blockbuster movies. You have Despicable Me. You have, you know, all these movies where it's not like this at all.
No. They're trying to make like moral commentaries, which a lot of movies, I mean, I would say that most movies are trying to make moral commentaries. So that's not anything new, but it's like they're specifically. Something about that. Maybe I just haven't had time to think about.
This is what it is, I think. I think it is a and this is going to say something more about culture rather than movies.
Yeah.
But I think it is a, they are trying to insert the PC terms into a postmodernist movie.
Yeah.
So I think it's just like they're trying to shoehorn these ideas into a movie where it doesn't fit because the theme of the movie is postmodern, but okay. They're trying to insert truths into it. So it doesn't fit and it's awkward and it becomes more poignant to us.
Right.
We see it more because it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
And that's what I think.
I think that's true. Like, I almost see, like, I've noticed a shift away from postmodernism, and I don't know that in some senses, because people have ideals and truths that they want to believe that have, like, this is less concerning about, like, whose truths and ideals are right or anything like that. But people want to have, like, a truth. And so I think that's maybe the shift that we're seeing in movies. So the directors are latching on. They're like, no, we can't just be like, nothing matters. Like Rick and Morty's great, but like we have to make a movie that like impacts culture and society in a way that we're not like reinforcing these negative stereotypes that we see. So we're gonna make these cool movies, but we're also gonna make sure they have an aspect of, they have this like underlying social commentary beneath them. But you're right. It's like they're still shoehorned into something that like they don't quite work together.
Exactly.
Because some of maybe the styles that they're taking, the reason why those movies worked is because they were more postmodern and they weren't like shackled to the weight of having to have
exactly
be as poignant.
About Which is why Rick and Morty works.
Right. Exactly. Rick and Morty is not shackled to anything really, other than like dumb stuff. Like
yeah.
Being
no,
being
it's dumb. What is it? It's dancing on the lid. I heard someone say, it was a theologian, he said, it's like dancing on the ledge of nihilism, or nihilism with a smile, dancing on the abyss, something like that.
I can't remember. It's like we're so nihilistic, but we also understand how sad it is, so we might as well make it happy, or something like that.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's just where, that's like a more of a societal thing that affects the movies.
Yeah.
But like we said, like I think of Vengeance specifically, you told me a lot of stuff that went in that. It's just so... Like you said, it was stuck in its time. It's not going to be timeless at all because it's referencing specific events that are happening now.
Yeah, because some of the stuff we're going to be like, oh, I see that. You know, a lot of Vengeance was just being about how divided the country was. But then its ending was so awkward because it's like, how do you... nobody has figured out the solution to the country being divided. And so the way... Obviously, it's going to be awkward, whatever decision that you make to end the movie. And then you end up doing something that's like completely outside of the character of the character that you made. So mm-hmm. It was... Then that's really what happened. Like, well, the third acts of these movies is really where they kind of fall apart.
Exactly. And it does a detriment to the message that they're trying to portray. Whereas in Don't Worry, Darling, you have this strong... supposedly strong female character, and you're promoting, you know, feminist ideas and stuff like that. But then it just falls flat with her character, you know, not being as strong as you thought. Just kind of falling flat altogether as a movie with not even just her character, but Harry Styles' character. And I hate to say it, I love Harry Styles. But it just fell flat. So then it's like, well, this movie sucked, you know?
Right.
And we can't deny it, even if we say it's great because we like the messaging, whatever, if you do. And the thing is, like, it's just, you're kind of just doing a detriment to what you think if you're directing a movie that doesn't, that the truth that you're trying to portray, or the truth that you think is the truth you're trying to portray, doesn't fit within the a worldview that isn't consistent.
Yeah. And I think that what we've seen is that people reviewing the movies like can tell. I mean, with Barbarian, I actually think this movie didn't get horrible reviews, and like I was reading reviews, but a lot of people were like, "Oh, the third act kind of was sucked." So I was like, "Well, what? Like, maybe they just like the stylistic elements, and then they're just more willing to be forgiving of the parts of the movie that they
don't
like."
That's how movies are these days. It's the style that gets in the trailers. People like it. They think it's good, but there's no sustenance.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, and I know there's some movies that are among my favorite movies that I'm like, maybe I haven't really thought about the message that much, and really what draws me in is the style of the movie. And maybe it's some of them like Holy Motors, which is like a decidedly complex idea. And so, of course, if you like it, it's going to be mostly because of the style, unless you're willing to put like a lot of thought into the movie. Mm-hmm. Like I think everyone has those movies, but the more that the plot and the messaging is contradictory and or whatever, you find issues with it, the less enjoyable the experience is overall. So
yeah, and that's what got me with this movie too. I think this movie is more minor than the previous movie we discussed, but I think it's just like they had this great female character, but she's being dumb in a right. lot of the situations. And I'm not saying that detriments, obviously everybody in this movie is dumb, but then it's like, if you want to treat this guy, if you want to show a, you know, what is it, a male patriarch paradigm that you're trying to abolish, and that's maybe what this director was going for, then you make his epiphany, am I a bad person? That ruins it. It makes it, like, so shallow and not deep.
And also, they don't like, he doesn't learn anything at all. So then it, I think the feeling you get is that, like, there's no getting better.
It loses track.
Yeah, it's like, at the end of the movie, it's like, okay, this is the world we live in. It's not, nothing's going to happen to change it, to make it better. So you better just, if you're a woman, you better just take your bullets and keep walking. Right?
That's literally how it ends.
I actually think that that's the feeling. That's probably not what they were going for, but that's what you get. And I also think, like, to the point that she's a strong woman, it's like they're still, in some aspects, stereotyping her as a woman in this movie and in the decisions that she makes to, like, go back and help. Like, you might view that as strong, but also you might view that as she cares too much about these people.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just, like, they're trying to point out, like, she's doing what any human should do in this situation.
Or I would even say a keyword would be maybe it was a maternal instinct, and I think that's what they were trying to even fight against in this movie, but displayed it.
Yeah. So that's where it's, like, when we're talking about contradictions, it's, like, the movie can say one thing, the characters can say one thing, and then the actions of the characters can display something different, and then it's confusing.
And it might be because maybe the worldview just doesn't fit into the context of the real world.
Right. Yeah. It might be that.
But, yeah.
Because there's always, like, subconscious things. Like, not every probably thing that the director put into this movie was, like, a conscious thought that I'm going to do it this way. It was maybe more of an instinct to do some things
the way. And you know something, though? I also think what you said, for some reason, it seems like all these directors are doing. I don't think it's always the directors. I feel like a lot of these,
okay, you're right,
like, bigger companies that are producing these things and yeah. stuff like that are probably saying you must include this criteria,
yeah, you know? Or the reason they get the budget for the movie to begin with is because they
will push these ideas,
script that has these ideas,
you know?
Yeah, because actually you might be onto something, and it might be something that I like to think of movies being. And there might be some movies, like, if you're watching a Martin Scorsese movie or Tarantino or some of those guys that I've referenced, like, they have their shortcomings and flaws, of course, but I think the thing that they have is that they get, like, complete creative control. So you're everything that you like about the movie, or if you don't like the movie, you can blame completely on them. You can say this was a great movie because of what they did, or if you don't like them, you can say this was a terrible movie because I don't like them and I don't like the movies that they make. And you can kind of be fair in saying that if I don't like the movies, I don't like them as a person, because to some extent, the movie that they make is revealing who they are, mm-hmm. like, as a person. So I hear that people say that about Tarantino. Like, I don't like Tarantino as a person, and I don't really like his movies. And I might be like, oh, that's kind of dumb. But also, if you think about it, it makes sense, because he has all this creative control over his movies. So if you don't like him as a person, you probably saw that in his movies too.
Sure.
So, you know, it might be a fair thing to say. Whereas this guy really hasn't directed anything big that I could tell. And so it's like, this is the first thing he did, probably under a lot of control of a large company. And there's probably a lot of producers saying, well, even Bill Skarsgård was one of the producers. I don't know how much influence he had. They might be like, you have to do things this way. You should think about changing this. Or we show this to a test audience and they want this. Mm-hmm. Or they survey a group of people and are like, what themes do you want to see in a movie? Mm-hmm. And they're all like, talk about patriarchy, talk about these things.
Yeah.
They're not necessarily thinking about it being in the context of a horror movie, but they're just writing. I can only imagine how they kind of do things from a business angle to try to make these movies successful.
Well, the keyword business, I think what our biggest example is, our biggest gripe with Disney right now is a lot of the things that they're doing either has a lot of these themes in them constantly, you know, being shoved in the face, or it's just shallowing them out to fit these ideas in, and it just doesn't work at all.
Because sometimes it's not even, like, I think you can enjoy certain works of art even if you don't agree with, like, even if you don't agree with the ideas being presented. Like, I think that's a possibility. Like, I don't think that I think art can kind of reach people in different ways, so it doesn't always have to fit in with, like, a political line necessarily. Because, like, it's funny to think about, like, some of the music. Like, some people would, you know, like some music and realize that the people writing it are, like, have some completely opposite views.
You are 100% right, yeah. But nobody will even watch something that has an ounce of something they disagree with.
Yeah, and And that, well, wait, what did you say?
I'm saying, like, if somebody's watching a movie and they agree with it, but then in, like, the last part of it, like, it has something that they don't like at all, then a lot of times, like, the common wrong person
will disagree. Well, but I think I kind of got off track. But what I was getting at was that I think with the Disney thing is that it is actually that the messaging is detracting from the artistic merit of the mm-hmm. movies. There's a... you could use, say, politics or however you want to describe it, but they've always been intertwined, art and the social, where society is going. Like, they've always been intertwined. So it's not, like, this is not a new thing that art is, like, being politicized or anything like that.
It's just we have had big, big, big changes in specifically American culture
yeah.
in the last 4 or 5 years.
And it's a commercialization of it, too. It's like, we are making a concerted effort as a corporate entity. So it's not just one guy who, like, believes something, because that's how it was before. It'd be like the Beatles were writing, like, music that was influenced by psychedelic stuff. Yeah. Like, that was
transcendentalism to a mainly Christian culture.
Yeah, that was a individual decision on them. In fact, their record companies probably didn't. There's probably people who were pushing back against that because they were like, this isn't going to sell.
Well, they were number one. They in their words, they were bigger than Jesus at the time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think some people, there's like a, even if people aren't, I mean, you can have all kinds of discussions, but there's like this sort of respect for the artist that they're like willing to be off the wall. And there could be maybe wrong ways to do that and right ways to do that, of course.
No, you're definitely right in that too. But
this corporate thing where it's like a bombardment, and it's not necessarily because the director is like convicted by something to be some way, or they might just hire because they're going along with it because they need to for their livelihood. Mm-hmm. And so it's a whole, dare I say the word, systemic.
It's such a loaded word. No, I agree. I think even if it is on that large scale, these corporate entities that are kind of pushing these ideas into these hired directors that don't have full creative control, I also think like, this is just a product of, like I said, the last few years. I think it's come later than the social movements. I think the entertainment that was coming out during the social movements was, you know, planned out years before and is different than what is coming out now. I think it's a delayed process, specifically with the corporate aspect of this whole
push in society. They're reacting. And maybe that's why it's been so rough, because it's like they're reacting, but sometimes reacting, you still, like, you don't react in the right way, or like
you're cowarding,
or yeah, you're cowarding. So it's like they react, but a lot, sometimes people don't like the way, like, within these movements haven't liked the way that corporations have reacted. Because the corporations aren't really fully understanding the people's, they're just like, oh, we need to pander to this audience now.
Or even so, they know that the audience doesn't like it, but they know that that route makes more money.
They also have to know that the bigger audience is also people who are like, it's like a collective thing. So it's like the biggest audience isn't necessarily people within groups that have been formed like political movements over time. The bigger groups are the people who are outside of those and are now like grappling with all of these movements, and so they're like, well, we can take these people because they're going to be like, we need to like this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they're finding that that's not necessarily, like, people aren't necessarily just going to give them a pass mm-hmm. because of that.
And they capitalize on yeah. those ideas. Like, I think in this movie they capitalized on the big movement with distrust in the police officers. I think that was clear in this movie that was a social commentary on that, no matter
and how subtle. And it was kind of shoehorned in, like, yeah. more so than even some of the other things. But yeah. yes, it was. They were trying to play off that.
And and it's like, you know, no matter what you believe about that, that's not what this movie was about whatsoever. Maybe, like, Detroit cops were in the middle of the firing range during the last few years, but... it's funny talking about, we're not even talking about the movie anymore, but the movie, like, really stuck to its Detroit context.
I kind of like appreciate that, because sometimes movies are so like ambiguous geographically, and if you're like me and you kind of like geographic things, it's kind of nice to be like, when they drove to downtown Detroit, which I've been to like once, I think, I was like, I could have been on this street. This looks like somewhere in downtown Detroit.
Yeah.
No, and then sure. if you've ever seen like the YouTube videos of people driving down like the neighborhoods in Detroit, you're like, oh yeah, this is, yeah. this is it. This is like, because I mean, Detroit's like any other place that people have like basically abandoned. It's shrunk. So like some of the reasons the areas are bad is literally because there's more houses than there are people.
Yeah.
And so there's nobody to keep up those houses.
Yeah. No, you're right. But yeah. Oh man. So yeah, I think that covers the social aspect of the movie. I think we covered it. Like, I think this is a good, we should probably stop talking about this in every podcast, you know?
Yeah.
I think maybe it's a good culmination for Don't Look Up, Don't Worry Darling, and this movie. I think yeah. It's a good culmination. What we learned is let's stay away from new movies for now.
Yeah.
Till the next social movement. Until
we watch, like, yeah, we'll watch a couple new movies that we have up, but they're going to be more in the like more commercialized sector.
Oh yeah.
So like Marvel and another franchise movie that we're pretty excited about doing. Yeah. I think since we watched Don't Worry Darling, I think we watched these movies, like the trailers, and we saw the cool aspects that, which I think we still think are cool,
mm-hmm.
but it's Harry like, Styles. It just feels like the, some of the other aspects really drag the movie down. And I get that other people are going to react differently if you have a completely different perspective from maybe what Zach and I are coming from. But I think, like, I don't know. This is the way that we see things, and we're going to stand by it.
So no, I mean, what we described was, like, honestly pretty neutral. It is what it is. Yeah,
we really stayed a lot more neutral probably than we could have.
Than we should have, honestly. But, but no, I think that's just how it is. I think most people can agree, like, that's just kind of how it is, no matter. I'm sick of it. I'm really sick of it. It ruined my Marvel movies. It ruined my
Yeah, but not everything can stay. I'm fine with Marvel movies being ruined. I just want to get back to the Quentin Tarantino. No, I'm just kidding. I'm also living in the past, so.
No, yeah, he's only got one more, though.
It's not going to go back there. I mean, just the way things are going. And maybe it shouldn't even, because I think if you look at those guys, I think you could find things with them that you're like, yeah, that's probably not really the greatest thing. So even the people that we hold up in the film community, at least some parts of the film community, it's like, yeah, of course there's things about them that you're gonna think about, and you're like, yeah, it's probably not, they maybe aren't like, shouldn't be revered as like absolute heroes.
No, they definitely shouldn't.
They
at
definitely
all.
Shouldn't be. Okay, yeah, I think it's fair to say they shouldn't.
We
be.
Just appreciate we the to, power they've been given.
We have to be careful who we're making heroes, I guess, maybe is what I'm saying. Like, yeah. And that's me as much as anybody else. Like, if I were to, you know, defend Quentin Tarantino to the death, it'd be like, why is that a battle worth fighting for? Because if I were to really think about it, from everything that I just said, you know, there would be a different angle that I could probably attack Tarantino from, mm-hmm. in terms of like some of the stuff that's in his movies.
True.
But I guess that would be a whole nother tangent. Maybe when we watch another Quentin Tarantino movie, inevitably in the future, we'll get to talk about that.
Yeah. No, I agree. Do you have any other thoughts about the movie, though? I forgot that we're talking about the movie.
No, I think we pretty well covered the movie.
Okay.
Also, I kind of turned my mic, so hopefully that sound wasn't that bad for a little bit.
Someone's ear.
Yeah, they're like, I can't hear what he's saying.
Was it the...
I'm imagining
it. If you're listening from hearing aids, I'm sorry. We have a lot of hearing aid listeners. We can look at the charts. 42% of our listeners. 42%
listen via their hearing aids.
Yep. So...
All right. Well, with that, we will go into our basement and our basement within the basement in the vault.
Mm-hmm.
And
we moved the vault down.
Our door will close automatically because all the doors in this movie did. And they opened automatically too. Yeah.
So our next guest will have to let us in.
Yeah.
Do we have any prospects for the future, Ben?
Prospects? What do you mean by
for
that?
For the future of the movie vault, anything anyone should look forward to?
Well,
ever in their lives?
We're going to have some exciting guests on. I can promise that.
Good.
We are planning to do a horror movie next week.
Mm-hmm.
Our Raging Bull episode should be coming out soon. So we referenced Martin Scorsese. There's your chance to hear us talk about him in depth.
Mm-hmm.
And we are working on finalizing a studio.
Mm-hmm. We've been saying that
for a while, and we've literally recorded at a different place like every single episode. So. Bear with us. It's going to be a slow process, but we're going to get there eventually.
Mm-hmm. It's a long dream.
Yeah. We're in it for the long game, whatever that means.
It just means we can be lazy.
It probably means that Zach and I, at some point, will have like a virtual studio where we're both recording from different places, and we might even live in different countries at some point, but we're still planning on doing the movie vault for all of time until we die. So
until we die, till death do it part. I didn't say us.
I'm trying to think of if there's anything else. So I will tease this because maybe it'll make me actually do it. So hold me accountable. themovievaultpod@gmail.com. I want to do a little thing to engage the listeners where I reveal my top 30 movies, which should be a fair amount different than the last time I did my top 25 on Outside the Vault, and kind of write a little bit about them and see whether we can engage some of our Instagram followers at the Movie Vault Pod on Instagram. And maybe get them fired up about, like, this movie is horrible, I don't like it, or why did you leave this movie off the list?
And I'm coming up with an algorithm to rank movies. I know it's a long process. I have to include a lot of variables, right? But I started it.
Okay. Yes. And so we'll have that so we can have more of an objective ranking. And then Zach,
I mean, I'm going to use it. Yeah.
Zach's going to use it. And maybe he'll write. He'll be like, this is why I put these numbers into the algorithm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
those logicians out there.
So that'll be fun. I'm trying to think. We probably have a lot of other ideas, but probably about 5% of them will actually come to fruition. So, but if even we can get 5%, I feel like that'll be good.
Good.
But share with your friends. If you want to be on the podcast, email us at themovievaultpod@gmail.com.
We're probably looking at prospects like March or February and beyond. Probably.
February and beyond at this point. But we would, in most cases, we would probably like to have you on. So.
Yeah, mostly. Like, if you're listening, most likely we'd want you on.
Yeah.
But it depends on who you are.
Yeah, I mean, you might have to send us an application, fill out an interview. It would definitely not be worth it financially for you, but.
COVID test.
And and we'll keep playing around with different things. But I've really enjoyed the conversations we had on the podcast recently, so I like the direction that we're headed in.
Are you saying that to me or the audience?
To you and the audience. Well, I would love it if the audience like disagreed with us and we got to write like argumentative emails back and forth, but
it'd be like polemical arguments against each other.
Yeah.
It'd be nice. Like, no, yeah. I appreciate the podcast, Ben. It's been good. A good idea. How long has it been? Like 2 years or so?
2 years? I don't even think we mentioned that it was like 2 years.
Something
we just
like
skipped past it.
I forgot, yeah.
That's like our 2 year anniversary was in August, I think.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
That's what I'm saying. We didn't even think about it.
Let's wait till 3 years to do something fun.
Yeah.
I don't really care about a 2 year anniversary.
5 years would be a big deal, I feel like. Also, 100 episodes realistically could be in April. If we stay on our current
schedule. April Fool's Day, 100th episode.
Yeah. I don't know what we'll do. Maybe we'll toss it out to the listeners to get to maybe come up with some
suggestions. I'm not having it be something lame like sausage.
Well, we don't have to listen to what they say. I'm just saying.
Or James and the Giant Peach.
Because I have some ideas, but.
Or Bob the Builder the movie.
Yeah. But I don't know.
Zootopia.
Maybe we could try to get a huge guest on for 100.
Start messaging now. Ben and I have some prospects.
We do have some prospects, but. You know,
it's
a long shot. I would give it like less than 20% or 20%.
I give it 21%.
Okay, we'll see. And that's why we're being so, because obviously it would, well, we might get in legal trouble if we were like, we might get this person on when we have no idea. Probably not legal trouble, but it just wouldn't be a good idea.
Yeah,
wouldn't be very scrupulous of us.
Not at all. Not scrupulous at all.
I think that's what that word means.
I don't know.
Don't check me on that.
I just follow you. I don't know.
All right. Well, with that,
I'll close it. Pew, 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 pew. War.